Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm Jeff Howard, and I've got Christina Birdsall with me. Hey, Christina.
Hi.
All right. I just had to redo that because I hadn't turned on Christina's mic. But Christina is here because her film, Annie and the Scar, short film that was an official selection at Filmvasion Los Angeles last year in 2023, took home. I'm going to mention your awards off the top now instead of just saying how much I liked it, although I love that freaking film. You won the Grand Jury Award for Best Performer in a Supporting Role. That was Regina Meltzer. Mm-hmm. And you also won the Audience Award. And it's funny, we changed the Audience Award that year, just all the one. So you won the Audience Award. We didn't like add short drama or short this, just anyway.
It was just straight audience?
Straight Audience Award.
Oh.
I don't know. I know, I feel like I should say Audience Award for Best Short, but like, I don't know. I'm derailing your podcast by talking about our award systems.
No.
But it is a kick-ass motherfucker. By the way, cursing is encouraged.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Great. There's an explicit warning, like the explicit box is clicked. So it's a motherfucking great film. So funny. So smart. I had pointed out to you in the now not recorded podcast attempt that you did submit it as drama. And it is dramatic, for sure. But it's also probably one of the funniest films we had in Film Invasion LA last year.
Yeah, I think that I didn't really know what to do with it at the end. And, you know, there's so much seriousness with filmmaking and, like, dramas are revered, even though I love dramas, but I love comedy. So I think I was maybe just in a little bit of denial or shadow, or maybe it was safer to not say it was a comedy. So if people didn't laugh, then it was like, oh, that's okay. It's not a straight comedy, you know?
That's a solid reason, because I always joke with people that horror and comedy are actually the hardest genres because you can't fake a laugh.
No.
And you can't fake a scare.
No.
But you can show someone a drama, and if they're like, I'm not sure I got it, you can just look at them in the eyes and go, well, then you just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't laugh, you can't tell them that their sense of humor is wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
But Annie and the Scar, I think, made the whole theater laugh many times.
Yeah, no.
So many funny moments.
Thank you. I'm getting better at taking compliments. And I think, as weird as it is for people who are making films, especially for myself, who I'm also an actress, like, I don't like the attention. It makes me really uncomfortable, so I'm trying to not be a weirdo.
Is that attention in general, or attention like as the creator, as the filmmaker, writer? I guess I should have mentioned you got a couple credits besides the lead actor,
yeah.
Writer and director, and you produced it with two other people.
Yes.
So this is your baby.
Yes, literally. It was my
no
baby.
Pun. Yeah.
No pun intended. Yeah, I think just in general, it's hard for me to take compliments because I wrote and directed it. Like, as an actor, it's like, okay, you like my acting. I can just take that. But being the person behind it made me feel weird. And also, I felt some kind of way about being in it. Like, oh my gosh, I'm being this attention whore that I'm in it. And I wrote it and I directed it. And I had to just deal with that because nobody gives a shit but me. I was the only one worried about it, is what I realized after the screenings that I had and people approached me about it. Like, it's no one's thinking that. It's just my own shit about feeling weird. Like, I don't, like, almost not even giving myself permission to, like, take up that much space in a weird way.
No, that makes perfect sense. But also, what is more vulnerable? Like we do vulnerable things all the time.
Yeah.
Like, people have a fear of public speaking. But to put the time and effort into writing something and then making it and then presenting it to the world, like, that's... Is there anything more vulnerable?
Yeah. I don't think there is. Like, it's just exposing everything. And then on top of that, like, I showed my own C-section scar in it. Which the act of doing always felt like therapeutic. But it was when it was done that I was like, oh shit, now what? someone's going to watch this and then maybe judge it or not get it, or, you know, like that's where all the fear really set in.
And I mean, for real, I mean, we can probably cover this when we get to the, your, cause I'm just going to ask for your life story in like 10 seconds, but, but you couldn't have cast someone else.
Yeah, no, I actually did do a casting, for the role I played. And while I was so lucky to have so many amazing actresses submit and audition, it just felt like, you know, this is such a personal story. I'm not going to be able to work through it in the way I need to work through just as a human if somebody else does it. It's not that somebody else couldn't have been capable, but it just, I needed to do it for me.
Well, and your insights to what the character is going through.
It was me. It was such an extension of me. So I had to do it. Like,
yeah, no, and I think it adds so much to the film that it is clearly personal,
mm-hmm.
for sure. All right, so now we've covered that all your creative whatever flowed into talents, all your creative talents, you know, the myriad. Because look, not all. I used to joke back in the 80s. There was a show on TV called When Animals Attack, and I would always joke when actors direct. Like, because it was just as horrible. Like,
yeah.
Like, my friend's dad was an editor on a Kevin Costner movie and, like, shared with us that he was, like, the worst director he'd ever met. And the only reason the film was good is because everybody else worked twice as hard to make up for how bad it. But there's so many great. And now on the festival level, at least, there's so many great actors also writing and directing.
Doing it all. Yeah. I definitely look towards people that are doing it well as expanders to like be able to do it myself. But also a key part of that was I was able to lean on my DP, Tammy, and my producing partner, Bo, who's also my husband, just during the process, because I couldn't watch everything back. We did a lot of work in pre-production to make sure that the look was set and everything was properly planned out. But I had to really trust, too, that the team I put in place were all awesome. And I just had to, like, do a trust fall, kind of, because I couldn't get in my head.
I was going to say that must be why the performance is so good, because you did the trust fall and took your mind when you were on screen. Hopefully you weren't thinking about all your other duties.
No, I wasn't. I was in it when I was doing it, but it was hard to flip back and forth. And I think that while I definitely will be in more things that I direct the next couple projects, I want to just write and direct. I don't want to do it all. I want to just take a step back to see really like if directing is something that I want to keep, at pursuing, or if it's just like, I'm more of a writer that wants to like
you're going to test market yourself.
Yeah, I just need to like, I just need experience it where like I can just sit back. Cause I do think being in it, there's stuff I could have caught probably or allowed more space and time for with just like, let's just throw this take away. Let's just have more fun with this. And I think that I was a little more controlled because I had to be because I had, you know, well, you know, working on anything low budget, you're like, we only had a full crew one day. I mean, it was like, I also had no AD. So it was like that AD and, you know, I had it all going on in my brain. And so I think if I could have just directed, I could have had a little more fun directing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Cause yeah, I'm sure it was you felt like you're in the middle of a tornado for however many days you shot. But all right, so now I'm going to go back in time.
Yes.
What got you first interested? Were you initially interested in acting? Were you always a creative kid who was writing mm-hmm. short stories and whatnot? Like what's, go ahead.
Yeah. So I definitely was, I've always been like a creative kid and, you know, we were talking about this before, highly sensitive. And I just recently went through, I saved, like, I had pen pals as a kid. And I also saved all the notes I wrote to my friends and got from them. And I wrote poems, which I have a terrible memory, Jeff. Like, I can't really remember a ton. It's these things I've written and done and pictures I've taken and that make it's like, oh, okay, that's how I even have some sort of semblance of a memory. But I found poems that were like so sad and dark, way too dark for like 10-year-olds to be writing. So I've always been, and I was also, when I was very small child, like 4 or 5, I was just constantly talking. I mean, I was the kid that talks too much on every sort of report card. Like, I wouldn't shut up. I was constantly pretending in a dream world, like babbling on about stuff. So I think it's always been living in me, but writing for sure growing up was an outlet for me. Stories, poems, and that was sort of a gateway into acting. So acting's what got me to LA. It's always my first love. I love it. It's so fun and therapeutic. And, you know, I did it in grade school, junior high, high school, like most, you know, started at a young age, but never really thought it could be a career or something that people actually pursued. Shadow artist, I guess, is a word that I'm still battling through. Like, okay, I can just admit I'm a writer and director, you know?
I think you can, but let me ask a simpler question.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really far removed from...
Far removed.
So no wonder it didn't feel real because, yeah, if you're in Kansas,
it's not like
people become actors, people become writers and directors. Like it's super isolated from that world.
Super far away. And, you know, like my dad... we're like middle class. We're, you know, what used to be middle class now. I don't even know if it exists, but blue collar worker. I just wasn't exposed. I mean, my mom went back to college when I was a kid and got a degree in accounting. So it was like nothing creative around me. No one was doing that as a living or even really being creative. No one in my family really. I mean, my only exposure was through movies, which, you know, I still, it was like a dream. Like, this isn't a real thing, you know?
No, I hear that all the time. Like, yeah, if it's so, I'm an LA native, so it's kind of different.
Yeah.
Because you happen to like, I mean, look, my dad owned a liquor store, but it was near the Disney lot. So right? so in Burbank, so like actors were like, coming in and when I was like stocking the shelves at like age 7. So like it didn't seem far removed.
Right. It's a weird juxtaposition. It's like your parents weren't working in entertainment, but you were surrounded by it being
here. But my world was totally skewed because it seemed like a normal thing and it's not.
Yeah. No.
Well, your experience is probably way more accurate.
Yeah. The opposite. It's like I just saw a meme on Instagram like everyone showing up to LA. We're all like told we're the most talented in our hometown, and we show up like that, like Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story, like, oh, we're the best. And then you realize, oh, we all came here with the same goal. And I think moving to LA was for acting, going back to, you know, where I started. And for a minute, for a while, I was caught up in the competition of it all. And sort of that lack mentality that like, oh, those around me when they're doing big things, it's not going to happen for me. And then in doing lots of self-work, I've realized like, no, if it's possible for somebody, it's possible for me. There's enough space for all of us to create and make all these things and do all these creative things that we want to do. So
absolutely. It takes that maturity to realize that you don't have to have the sharp elbows like
right.
Someone else getting a commercial, they didn't get it right at you.
Right, yeah, yeah. And acting,
it wasn't to spite you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think acting as actors, we're set up to be competitive with each other. And so, it took a long time. I'm still undoing it.
Well, I wonder if things are, well, okay, I'm going to say something, but I'd rather go back to like when you first started acting in high school or whatever.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the self-tape era is a little better for actors than the cattle call when you lined up and there is 20 people who look similar sitting on chairs in front of a door and you go in one by one and you're like, that had to make it more competitive.
It's so interesting. I worked as a like casting assistant intern for an office when I first moved here. And it was so interesting to see because there's that vibe of like, you're looking out and you see better looking versions of you, probably more, you know, versions of you that have more experience, more credits, whatever. And then you're all waiting and doing that same game. But there, so the self tapes have like made it more accessible and you're not like psyching yourself out. But also there's some sort of magic being in the room with live people. So it's hard.
Do you know, there's no way to not think,
yeah.
Are they really looking at this?
Yeah. I think that when you realize that people are on your side and they just want you to be the person, it makes it all easier. And I still think you have to, even after doing castings myself, I still, as an actor, have to remind myself, they just want you to be the right person. And there's so many things that are not in your control. You don't know who else they're casting. You don't know the story. Maybe you're just not, you're great, but it's not going to serve the story to have you there, you know? So there's so many things outside of your control, which I think doing casting has like shown me like, oh yeah, shit. Like you're fucking great, but you're 20 and you're too young for this part. You know, like you're actually like, I need somebody older, but you're fantastic to see those things like where you just have no fucking control.
And it takes a lot. It does take maturity to take that kind of to know that that's true. Right. Mm-hmm. Because Lord knows running two festivals, you know, we get angry emails from people saying like, you know what I mean? Like you obviously have no talent. Like, honestly, your film's great.
Yeah.
But we get like 800 submitted and we're going to show 45 at the theater. And so sorry, but we had to make some decisions. Like,
yeah.
I've talked to filmmakers who are like, I never believed the email that said, we love your film, but we don't have room for it. And until they became an assistant programmer for a festival and realized it is true. Like there's stuff you love. Mm-hmm. And then you sit in a room and everyone votes and you're like, you know, that one I loved, I get it. There's like, there's merit to the other ones. And like, you just, it's not, rejection doesn't mean you're not good.
Yeah. It's that external validation. That's something I'm like still working through, even making my film that was in your festival. I was still had a little bit of that like end result in the back of my brain when I was making it. And it caused me to like, maybe zig when I could have zagged, and not to say that one way is better or worse, but like I could have, there's definitely some instincts I had to be weirder, if you believe it or not. Or to
wait,
like,
so Annie and the Scar could have been weirder.
Could have been weirder.
And you held back?
And I held back, or like, see, not as wrapped up in a neat bow. Like I felt like it had to like have this full circle. These things that these lies I told myself, because I was thinking of the end result, and I've since been like, fuck the end result. Because I can't, I think for me at least, and I think so many artists are looking for this too, that external validation. If you're searching for it, first of all, you're never going to get it. And even when you get it, you're going to be like, oh yeah, but they're just saying that. It's never going to fill the hole in your heart if you don't first see your worth. Like, yep, okay, that's fine. I didn't get into those festivals. Whatever. Keep it moving, you know?
We all suffer from the same thing. I sit there and go, okay, we've put together a beautiful festival, a beautiful lineup of films. And if no one walks into the theater to watch them, I'm still going to be proud of what we did. I'm still going to be proud. But you, on the day, you're just praying that the theater fills up.
Yep.
Because you need that.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a bummer. But, all right.
Okay.
Young person, high school. Yes. When did you first switch from being like a creative kid who writes to someone who tried performing?
I did a play in grade school. It was actually, I played a teacher in it. You know, I think it was in like third or fourth grade. It was about Martin Luther King. And I was his teacher. And I remember very little about that experience other than I loved playing a role. I loved being on stage. And it was just so like, it was just fun. I don't remember the specifics of it, but it definitely something inside of me of like how you could tell a story that I liked. And then fast forward, like junior high, high school, I started doing plays, which I loved. I did like Abbott Costello, like Who's On First, which was really fun in junior high. I've done like
like talent showish stuff? Or,
no, it was just sort of like a variety show.
Oh, cool. So you got to do that.
Yeah, we dressed up in suits.
How cool. So that's a cool school that let you come in and do that.
Yeah, which I've always liked, you know, not just doing the girly things, which I think, you know, if I just went out for roles, especially as a younger woman, it was just, you know, the ingenue, the like sexy girl number one, whatever, just, you know, shit that was like kind of boring to me. And I felt like this sucks. But that's my LA journey letter, which is why I like was like, okay, I need to start making my own shit because this isn't getting me anywhere to go the traditional route.
And bravo in a way, even young saying I can play Abbott and Costello. Like that's just an egalitarian. I will use the word feminist because I believe my hero, Gloria Steinem said, feminism is believing that everyone's equal.
Yeah.
It's not believing women are better than men, which mm-hmm. is what Fox News people say. It's just believing that women are, everyone's equal.
Right.
We're equal. So if you want to put on a suit and play Lou Costello, which one were you?
Honestly, I can't remember.
And did you
there's
do it with like a best friend?
Video something. No, it was just, you know, me and another girl, not super, you know, we were just both like cast in this. And, you know, kudos to my teachers that weren't trying to push us into a direction. And I think that like that was my authentic self. Just this is fun. Let's do this. Not thinking about gender, anything. And then, you know, you go through life, teenager, whatever. And maybe some of that I had to undo again. Like, wait, I can do whatever I want. I don't have to. I can make a short where I'm in sweatpants. It doesn't matter. You know, like what I don't have to be presenting in this super feminine way to be able to make a story. So yeah, and then high school plays, but also we did Forensics. Nobody really knows about it in California.
Forensics?
Forensics. It's not CSI Forensics. Right. It's competitive speech and acting.
I have heard about it. Well, yeah, but almost like debate. But
yes, so debate was in the fall. And then Forensics was in the spring. And you'd do these plays, like little, you know, tiny excerpts from plays. It could be like just a monologue or a duet or with another person. And you'd go and compete every weekend across the state. Like, you'd go through, like, the first round, second round, third round. They'd tally up all the scores, and you'd see who gets into finals. And I did that freshman through senior year, and I loved it. It was
that is pretty courageous.
So fun. And, you know, I had lots of rejection, too, that I took hard as a kid. You know, there was this thing everybody wanted to go to nationals every year. And I didn't qualify once. I would get into finals and I would get seventh or eighth. And you had to get in the top six to qualify. And I never qualified. I got like within a hair. I'd have my partner that I'd worked so hard on, and then they quit. And so the next year I'd get a new partner to work on. And so finally, I think like just with life, when you let everything go, my senior year, I was like, fuck this shit. I'm going to just do a funny piece that I like by myself. Who gives a shit? And I ended up placing like third in state or something. Like, it wasn't a goal. I was just like, screw it. I don't care anymore. Forget it. I'm a senior. I'm never going to be able to do this again. Let me just have fun. And then of course, like in life, when you just let it all go and you do it for the purest reasons and not to win, something happens.
Which is a rad lesson to learn senior mm-hmm. year of high school.
Yeah.
And I mean, I want to repeat, like, I mean, that takes a lot of courage to like travel and perform and know that you're being judged. I mean, that's a hell of a thing to take on.
Yeah.
For a young person.
Yeah, it was so fulfilling and I loved it. And I loved my forensics coach, who was also a senior English teacher. Yeah, it was great. But then I went to college and I thought acting's a dumb major to have. And so,
because the prospects?
Because I'll never make a living doing that. Why would I do something so irresponsible like get a degree in theater? So instead, I was undeclared for a while. I tried psychology, as many people do, and then I was afraid I was going to have every single thing we studied in class. And then I got a degree in journalism because I liked writing. It felt like a more responsible degree to get. And then I got a job.
And did you go to college in Kansas or
no,
you went out of state?
I actually moved to California.
Oh.
My mom moved to Sacramento. And so I went to college in Sacramento.
Oh, got it.
So I sort of followed her and my sister here, went to college there. And I was in Sacramento for about 11 years before I moved to LA. So it sort of got me in a roundabout way to Los Angeles. Like, I'd always dreamt of moving to California when I was in high school, you know, grew up in a really small town in high school years, junior high, high school years. And so I was like, I'm going to go to California, you know, but then I ended up going after I graduated to go to college in Sacramento. And then I got a job working in IT business consulting and just completely was like, okay, I'm a grown up now. I don't get to do these
journalism.
Fun things.
You didn't.
No, even journalism. I was like, no, I'll just get this other job. And I did that for years. And then ended up getting into the theater scene, the local film scene in Sacramento. And then eventually was like, I am so bored in this cubicle. I don't want to do this anymore. And I am turning 30 and I don't want to die not trying. So I moved to LA and for acting. That's what got me here.
Right. So your inner actor had to stay dormant for like you said 11 years or so.
Yeah. I mean, it was the local scene of theater and the local film scene that kind of gave me that taste so it wouldn't completely die.
Right. So when you got the journalism degree, you weren't like doing some plays on the side?
No. In college, I completely stepped away from it. I was like, this is just stupid. And then probably around like 23, 24, I was like, let me just try. I'll just start by taking some acting classes at a local theater and see how I like that. And then I did a play and that was really fun. And then I did another play. And then I got in the film community a little bit up there and I did a couple things, some 48-hour film festivals, was in some projects, like a friend of a friend, like, hey, will you be in this project? Sure. And then it was like, oh, well, maybe this could be more. And should I really give this a shot? Because it's clear that I love it. And I'm good at it. So maybe I just say, fuck it. And I just go down to LA. And I did with no plan. And
IT will be there if you ever need it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But, and this is me projecting assumptions, but was it way better to test the waters in Sacramento? Where I would assume that the people acting and making films and stuff in Sacramento are doing it for the right reasons, whereas a lot of people who come to LA right off the bat, like, just want to be famous.
Right.
They're not doing it for the work.
Yeah. And I don't want to like shit on LA because I think it gets shit on a lot by people. But yes, it does attract a lot of people that are broken in their little hearts, who are trying to find a meaning to their life and get that validation we were talking about earlier. And in Sacramento, it was just a community and it was just that. But ironically enough, I mean, I've been in LA, oh Jesus, fucking longer than I'd like to admit. just in the sense of like, why am I not further along in my career? 12 years? 12 years. I've been here for 12 years. And I'm finally now starting to find a community of people who are, I think, doing it for the right reasons. That feels like community. Like your film festival was an amazing experience. And I met some filmmakers through that. Another women's group that I'm a part of, this restaurant in Los Feliz that is doing a yearly like film festival where it's just the community of people who work there plus their regulars. And I've become involved in that. So in a roundabout way, I've sort of found this community. And even with live theater, just as of recently, I've found people putting up these shows, you know, once every like 3-4 months that are like low risk creativity. And so I feel like I'm kind of finding what I had in Sacramento. It's just taken me.
It's hard. That's what I try to tell people about LA. And I totally get when people rip on LA because I can, but by the way, I'm third generation LA. Yeah. So to me, LA is the small town where all your aunts and uncles and cousins live. But I'm aware of what happens when people move here and who moves here for the wrong reasons. I mean, I've sat with people, not for the podcast, but I've met people who are like, you know, I came here to be a screenwriter. And you're like, oh, what are you working on? I don't have any ideas. I want to have an office on a studio lot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, shouldn't you have an idea for a film before you get the office? But like, they're just here to feel important.
Yeah.
And you've got to screen out those assholes. But it's wonderful that you found a community. And that is, I mean, admittedly, what our festivals are about is it still blows my mind how everyone is really good and nice.
Yeah, everyone I met was amazing. All the shorts that were in my block were great. I got to see Donut, which was great. I met him and his...
I'm so glad you watched Donut.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I wasn't able to go to the screening because, you know, getting a babysitter sometimes got is it. Challenging. Understood.
So you took the time to watch it online?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I'm giving Christina a golf clap because that's actually one of the things that's the only thing I don't hate about the online portion of the film festival is that filmmakers who can't make it to screenings can see other stuff.
Yeah. And
I love Donut.
Yeah. I really, really loved it. And I think now, you know, I used to be one of those people who would just talk shit. Oh, that thing is stupid. And like just about big movies, whatever, and be so judgmental. And it was so much of me just projecting because I wasn't doing shit. And now that I'm doing it, I'm like, oh my God, I have so much respect. And I just have a newfound, like, I really want to see people's stuff. And his movie was great. To go back, it was a great block. You know, you never know what you're getting into sometimes with the short film block, but it was amazing.
Some festivals... I've been to those festivals where, first of all, they have a block of 9 shorts instead of a block of 4. Like, we keep it to 4 or less.
Yeah.
Because I'm glutton. I'm just greedy for discussing them.
Right.
So you can't go more than 4 if you're going to talk about each one for 15 minutes afterwards. Like, we spend more time Q&A-ing, if that's a verb, than watching.
Right.
So, which is important to me, because otherwise, if you're just going to watch them and not discuss them, just stay home.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I've been to those festivals where it's like, meh, short, meh, awful, something great, awful, something great, and then something meh. And it's like, man, those filmmakers who made a great film, to like watch their film up against poorly done work, like it just diminishes the whole experience.
Yeah. No, it was super fun, and you can just feel when like it's a sense of community when you're at a screening and people are there to be supportive and watch. And they're not just there to like judge, you know? I think that's important because we're all trying to do it. We're all flailing a little bit as we do it. And it's nice to feel supported, you know?
And it's nice to meet people who were equally courageous, right?
Right.
Like you, it takes big fucking risks to make an indie
short. The dick one? I can't remember what it was called, but it was in my block. The zombie dicks?
Why is my brain?
Am I misspeaking? Did I just imagine zombie dicks?
No,
It was like a they shot on the back lot of Universal.
Oh yes, yes. Oh yes, the zombie with the massive dick.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so there was just one. That's right.
Dong
of the dead. Thank you. One dick, to be clear.
I know, which was a little rough for all the other films because like.
It was
for your
so
your Q&A came right after.
Of course,
like
everyone
a 20
wanted to know
dildo.
About the dong, which is fine. I wanted to know too.
Yeah, but yeah, wonderful block. Yeah, and everything different and funny and original. And I mean, I was about to say, like, you and all those other filmmakers take such personal risk. Like, like you're risking your own money, probably.
Yes, yes.
You're risking your own time. You're risking yourself. Paul, who directed Dawn of the Dead, was also on screen. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you all took risks that, like, you could, like, present yourself to the world and the world, and then a room full of people could go, why'd you make that dumbass movie?
Yeah, exactly.
You think penises are that funny?
Yeah.
You know? Which actually they are.
They
probably.
Are.
But that's another thing that makes Annie and the Scar so wonderful. There's lots of dick jokes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're the first person to ever do the cesarean scar.
I've never seen a cesarean scar on camera.
Ever.
Or even in real life before my own.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Right?
That's crazy.
Hugely crazy. And I have no statistics on the percentage of births that are cesarean, but I know a lot of people who've had them.
It's over half, if I had to guess. I mean, it's a big number.
It's actually, in this country, it's bigger than it should be.
Yeah, it's a large number.
Because they just like the doctors want to schedule it so they can golf.
Uh-huh, exactly.
They're like, I could wait for this woman to be ready, or I could tell her.
Yeah, oh, it's ready right now.
it'd be safer to do it now. Plus, in 3 hours, I could be at the links.
Yeah. Maybe a third, but at least it's a larger number.
It's a larger number than it needs, and it's quite a few. And it's a major ass surgery.
Mm-hmm. It is a major ass surgery, Jeff. You can't cough or laugh after, and I like to crack jokes, and it was a bitch, can I just tell you? Because I had to dim, I had to like erase my personality, because any kind of anything, it would bring me to immense pain.
And I mean, that first week or two that you're recovering, there's a newborn you want to hold?
Yeah. It's a mess.
And maybe walk around with it and like, that's all off the table.
Yeah. Those baby carriers that hang off of you, forget it. Like if you have a cesarean, you're not using that.
Yeah, I know. Not for, Yeah. So it's, I mean, not to, by the way, not to make fun of Paul and Dong of the Dead that there's too many dick jokes in the world, but I'm just, you're both so creative.
And, yeah.
And creative people are just.
And there's room for both. There could be dick jokes and a cesarean, you know, a C-section. Like, there's room for both.
There really is.
I love a good dick joke, you know? So there's room for both. I think that's the best point of it all.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, we jumped. Okay. But we jumped.
Yeah, we're jumping.
Right? Because.
Yeah.
Well, so you found a community here.
Yes.
And acting and got involved in stage a bit, you said?
Yeah. I haven't been on stage theater since Sacramento. So it's been, I don't know, 15 years. And I did a short film. The restaurant I was talking about, Mass Hall Film Festival, I got involved with them. And the director of the short film that I was in, she was like, oh my gosh, you're so funny. You should be in this theater show that I work with. And you have a month to put up the show. So 2 weeks to write it. They all have a theme. They're just little one acts that are each like around 6 minutes long. And then you have 2 weeks to get the show on its feet. And then you have one night of performances, two shows in one night, and then that's it. So it's a very like low risk, high reward creativity where it's just a blast. But, you know, it's just everyone's just there to have fun and create something and no one's taking it too seriously. So that was my first time being on stage and it was a blast.
Yeah. It must be amazing to use those muscles again.
Yeah. Because
performing for human beings in person instead of a crew.
It was such a different muscle. The muscle memory came back, but it's like, if you haven't done sit-ups in a long time, you're like, oh yeah, I have to move my body like this. It was weird and strange and great and just really fun.
For sure. But I always think that people who have spent time on stage have an edge, an advantage in a way, because that immediate feedback really helps you hone, right?
Love the immediate feedback. And that's what it's, you know, the first show of the night I did was fucking great. I mean, we killed. I felt great. I don't know. I was like, it just all came back to me. And the second show, I started to get tired. I'll be honest. I go to bed super early and it was still great, but I could feel myself off just a tiny bit. And that's live show where you just have one shot to get it right. And sometimes the things that go wrong can end up making it so great. And you get that immediate gratification. Whereas a film, you're working on it for so long and then you have no idea how it's going to be received, what people are going to think. It's just a different thing.
Well, in two shows in a night, if you kill the first one, the second show is just, I mean, how do you keep that energy?
I know. I just couldn't. Straight up, I was out of shape. I couldn't keep it, you know?
But I think we all know, like, the people who do whatever, you know, 6 a week and then 2 on Sunday, it's like,
whoa.
It takes you never have 2 great ones in a row.
Yeah. And that just, and two, I think, doing live shows, it kind of gets you out of that perfectionistic mode that you can get in because you just have to let it all go. So I think that was a nice reminder for me, like, what's perfect anyways? Like, just do it, you know, don't be too precious with it. Just do it.
Super important thing to accept, to not be so precious.
Yeah.
All right. So while you're in LA and finding your community and whatnot, still writing a lot?
Yeah. So, my focus has been writing. A couple, maybe like 2-3 years ago, I had like vision boards kind of thing. It was a Trello board for anyone who's a nerd and likes intense organization. Trello is like an office, like a tool to use for project management. And so I had on my Trello board,
I'm thinking I should write this down.
It's great. I really like it. It's like a visual whiteboard, essentially, but it's all digital. Visual whiteboard, it's redundant, but like it's just digital, which I love. So my husband had one goal up there, and that was to become a commercial director. And so everything he was doing, supporting that goal, and he's getting that goal, right? Because he was just laser focused. I, bless 2 years ago, Christina, I was like, I'm going to do a comedy special. I'm going to make a short film. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to write a feature. I was like all over the place and didn't get all those things done because I was all over the place and I don't have a team of people working for me and I have a child and I have to make money. So I decided I'm going to just write and that's going to be my focus. So, but I also want to get a couple things finished. So I wrote two short films that I'm in pre-production on and I had money for Annie. We shot on the Alexa Mini. It was, you know, beautiful, obviously. And this, I'm like, okay, I don't have any money. So if I can't get a DP that wants to just go shoot something for nothing, then I'm going to just shoot on my iPhone and say, fuck it. Or we have a 7D. Like, forget it. I just want to do these two projects because I think I'm really trying to figure out my voice as a director. Like writing for me is so much easier. I also write for, you know, a freelance writer, copywriter. I write for like online publications. Like I had a couple articles in HuffPost. Like writing for me is just so much easier to be myself, but it's the directing where I find it to be harder to be myself.
Well, that makes any sense. And harder to practice, right? Like you can sit down and write every
day.
But how do you practice directing?
Yeah.
But and I'll tell you something. I can name more than one film that's been at the festival that was shot on an Alexa, and they when they did reshoots, they use an iPhone, and you cannot tell.
It's worse. It's so accessible now. Filmmaking. You don't have to. You just shoot it on your phone. So I just shot some spec commercials last week that for a beauty device. They're all comedies, which I know isn't like the usual beauty space to be comedic, but I was like, fuck it. I want it to be funny. And if you're marketing to me, then it should be funny. So I was more or less doing it just to like practice that muscle. And then I just literally banged out a couple short scripts because that's what I did with Annie. I wrote it. I completely changed that script before we shot it. I just had to get something down to hold myself accountable because if I wait till it's perfect, it'll never get done. And I'm going to make those this year. Like I just wrote the second one and they're both, you know, I can do it on my own. Like we have the equipment. So, and I'm not going to be in these because I want to just hone that skill and just see, okay, where is this going to take me?
Right, right. And you want to be able to write the attention you paid to your performance mm-hmm. when you were on set. Obviously, you directed and you,
right.
everyone on your crew, whomever your DP knew what you were after.
Right.
But yeah, if you're not on in front of the camera, then you can really flex those and learn from them
and
practice and improve and see what you do. And by the way, like praise to you for like just pumping out a script and then realizing like nothing paralyzes a writer more than thinking my first draft has to be great.
Yeah.
No first draft is great.
No. And I too, like I didn't go to film school. I never took a screenwriting class. I'm literally just, I've had to work through, oh, but I'm not doing it the right way. You know, I was a great student. I got straight A's because this is how I do it. Great. I'm great at learning something, memorizing it, regurgitating it. And then I like forget everything. Right. So with this, I'm like, okay, I am going to just do what works for me, even though everyone's telling me, but that's not the way you do it. It works for me. So I'm just going to keep doing that, which is I just sit down. I have like ideas that pop into my brain and I might take notes on my phone or record something, but I just sit down and write. I have no idea where the fuck it's going.
That's the best kind of writing.
I don't do any of that shit because it would honestly, it would limit me if I did it because I would just get obsessed with the plan and never do. So for me, it works to just sit down and imagine I'm living in this world with the characters and like, where's this? And then I go back and I can like hone into, okay, what am I actually saying? Does this make sense? Does this serve? Can I cut this? Whatever. But I have to just sit down and do it.
And is that how the first draft of Annie popped out? Like you just sat down to write, which by the way, you're reminding me of, I mean, some of the greatest writers in the world just say, I just sit down every morning and I write. It's just, I just sit down to write. There's no plan. There's no,
yeah.
I don't outline. I don't do this. I just sit down and write.
Yeah.
I won't name because, well, the one that pops in my head is Woody Allen, and we can't talk about Woody right. anymore because he's, oh my God. But yes. So did you sit down and just, and then Annie was just like, you didn't sit yeah. down and go, you know what? I've been thinking about my cesarean scar. I'm going to write about it. No, like you just sat down and it popped out.
Ideas will come to me. When I give myself space, I have more ideas come to me when I'm less on my phone, less consuming things, and I can get that clutter away and I have more, you know, the time in the shower, the dead time stuff comes to me. And so I got this idea of like, well, what if a C-section scar was an imaginary friend? And that was the only idea I had. And so then I just sat down and wrote it. And that script that I wrote, the first draft, was there's not one line, there's not one bit of it that's the same in the script that we shot. I got a DP and I'd committed myself and I was casting. I cast with the original script. And then I was like, shit, I don't want to shoot this script. But then I had a deadline. I was like, well, I have to change it. Now it's time to change it. And I, you know, many meltdowns of like working through my fear and resistance, but I did it.
So having a shooting schedule made you.
The only way that film got done is because I scheduled it before I ever had it in motion.
Right. If you had sat there and said, I will schedule this once the script's perfect. Yeah, that process would work.
I had meetings with DPs before I even had a script because nice. I just had to like scare myself. It was reverse engineering. Like, how do I get myself to do it? And I had to do it with deadlines that were imposed with other people. Because if it's just relying on me, I can let myself down in a way. I mean, it's the healthiest way to look at it. But if someone else is depending on me, then it like will happen, you know? So I had to do that just to shake myself to get myself to do it.
And it's a little reminiscent of the live performance where you had like 2 weeks, mm-hmm. like 4 weeks to go on stage, but 2 weeks to write, 2 weeks to yeah. rehearse, and then boom, it happens. Like it's a little reminiscent
there's
of that.
There's no, yeah. And like I didn't write the stage play that I did, but as an actor, there's no time to like back out, overthink it, whatever. I just had to like, okay, we're doing this. It's happening.
So that great script, Annie and the Scar, I'm going to call it a great script.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
So you, how quickly did it change for you? Like, some of the things I love most about it, and yeah, I watched it again this morning, is when Annie and Cece are in the brother's childhood room.
Yeah.
And there's a very natural conflict. Like, I love that. I've actually had this talk with other people last night, where people are like, I hate when dialogue is perfect, right? And people are saying the perfect point and the perfect counterpoint. Like they're so miscommunicating
yeah.
and their way there and insulting each other and going, and then that natural way that they kind of recover and start like, I'm just so impressed with the writing of that scene.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think such a pivotal part about that scene was the brother's room. And that was just movie magic, if I can say something that feels so lame, but it's true. It wasn't supposed to be her brother's room, but we did not have access to something that looked like her room. We shot that in my husband's, in my in-law's house, and the room I was going to shoot it in, it wasn't going to work because there was no way to light it. And there's a balcony outside of the window so we could light it in the brother's room. So Tammy was like, we have to shoot it here. And there's no way we're going to make that room look like not that, you know? So I just leaned into it. So, okay, let's lean into it. It's the brother's room now. And that'll be funny because it's the wrong room. And then that kind of shaped that scene. Okay, great. I'm going to change that scene. So I did that on the fly, not, you know, a couple weeks before we were planning it out and realized that that's right. What we had to do. Then I changed the script to match what we had access to.
To match. But was there a little conflict before that between her and
You know what? I can't even remember what it looked like before. I know in the original version of the script, she gets kidnapped by her scar. And it's more of like she wakes up and she's handcuffed, you know, she's tied up and stuff. And they're in a hotel room. And then that all got thrown out the window because I was like, I don't want to have to get a hotel room. So I was changing the story to fit our production limitations, but I think in the long run, it worked really well in my favor.
Well, by the way, that's how the film industry has always worked. That's how, I mean, that's why in the golden era of Hollywood, the screenwriter was on the set. They'd turn to the screenwriter and go, okay, we have to change this now because of what's going on in the physical world. Like, go write and come back in an hour with the new pay. Like it just, that's just how it happens.
Yeah.
So you did it the way film's done.
Yeah. And I think there's that element of, I like to be open because while you have to make sure the story is still telling the story you want to tell, like, okay, does it, is it actually maybe better this way? Okay, let's just fucking embrace it. You know, let's, instead of like grasping onto control of like, no, I wanted it this way. Just, I like to just lean in and be a little bit fluid with that kind of stuff.
I mean, bravo. Cause I mean, I think, being super attached to something happening. I mean, you'll know when something has to be a certain way.
Yeah.
But it's so healthy to know when you, it doesn't have to be the way you originally saw it.
Yeah. There's like, I really wanted, the end scene between the two of them to have this like really epic, like movie, like sunset, like the back of them. I really wanted that visual cause I just wanted it. And so we made that happen. And then I also really wanted her to run backwards in her run home and it didn't make any sense. And they're like, okay, we'll do it. But I liked it and I got a laugh. So it's like, you know, I don't know why I wanted that. It just like, this is something I want to get. And then it worked.
You follow the instincts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wonderful. And I just, so the whole thing, it all came together well, right? Like you're happy.
Yeah, I am really happy. I think I'm ready to make the next thing and just see what that looks like, and try to just have a little more fun with the process and not put so much pressure because at the end of the day, we're not saving lives. This isn't brain surgery. Like, it's supposed to be fun. And while nobody felt my stress on set, I felt it. So I want to just be fun, more like a kid-like, I guess, in that sense of like, you know, which I think the other two I want to make, like one is about pasta. I want to do live action and it's not stop motion. I don't know how the fuck I'm going to do it, but with penne, it's depressed penne. It's about a depressed penne pasta. And it's all sort of like pondering life and like what's, you know.
Is the word anthropomorphism or is it, what's the word for when you take an inanimate object and you give it human qualities? But it seems to be, it seems to be in your soul.
Maybe. Yeah, that's interesting.
Which, by the way, like that's something that I think it's always great when, because we naturally, right? There's even, whatever, there's Instagrams of like manholes that look like faces, like and smiles, like smiles in random objects. And like, yeah, we're trained to, I don't know. I think it adds a magical thing to the world. I think the world needs magical realism.
Well, yes, magical realism is such a, like, I love when it's used. And I guess I wasn't even really trying to, write a script with magical realism again. But I guess that's what I inadvertently did. It just came from an idea of, like, penne is the most, if pasta was depressed, penne would be the depressed pasta. It's just like, just, you know, it's not fusilli. It's not, it's just kind of like poor penne, you know?
So yeah, this, and they don't stick together, like each one, like you.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so underappreciated and basic and a little boring and kind of sad to me. And so I was like, what if there is a penne pasta that was a little depressed? And like, how scary if you were a pasta and you're just in this box and it's so dark, like what's going to happen? You have no idea. Like, we have no idea what happens when we die. Nobody does, you know? So it's that same idea of, like, are you just, like, in this, we don't, you know, which most of the pastas are. And then, or are you just really, like, positive, which the other main penne pasta character is. Or this pasta that's just a realist and just, nope, kind of Eeyore, you know? Like, not negative in a mean way, but just, okay, you can hang on to your hope, and I secretly do like that about you, but let's be real. This isn't going to end well.
I mean, the important thing I'm taking home is that you're having fun. Like you are writing for the exact reason that people should, which is you enjoy it and you're telling stories that mean something to you, that resonate for you.
Right.
Like if you make it for the audience of one, then you have a shot that the audience will appreciate it.
Yeah.
But if you sat down and said, all right, festival audience has really responded to Now I'm going to do that. I saw a film where, yeah. Oh, you didn't get to see it. It was in our November festival. There was one where a young woman is interviewing, I think, at NYU, and she's trying to be a business major, but she draws her own comic books about a wiener character, like a hot dog in a bun, and she sees him. He's following her all around her interview with the person at NYU.
Did they see the hot dog? No one saw the hot dog.
But she like literally is like trying to shove the hot dog out of the way so that she can focus on. And it's whatever. It's lovely. But like I love a thing where an imaginary character enters the real world and makes it a little less shitty.
Yeah.
The world's shitty enough. We need that.
Right. It's just, it also makes it more digestible to think about really big, hard concepts, like more
approachable. Yeah, if your penne pasta pieces were, you know, people on a jury having like a moment of sharing like their feelings on life, like it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, I think that's what's great about comedy is it can make the hard things more easy to talk about as you know?
Oh, are you kidding?
Either we laugh or we cry, and ideally in a movie you do both, I think.
There's slapstick, there's all kinds mm-hmm. of comedy, but the best comedy means something.
Yeah, it just all. I mean, I watch a lot of kids' movies because of my son, and oh man, some of them they're just so great. Exploring, you know, this exploration of like life, I'm like, oh my God.
You start to miss kids programming when your kids get older and they... Like, every once in a while we'll throw on Adventure Time because it's wonderful.
Wait, what's Adventure Time?
Oh, it was when our kid was young, Adventure Time was the thing. It's just crazy. It feels like a LSD trip, but it was meant for kids. Sorry, it's... Yeah, whatever your son's watching is...
Wait, I mean... Movies sometimes he loves a movie, but yeah, I can't remember the one we were recently watching that I was like, oh, this is hitting me hard.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it's rough when you're sitting with a kid and like, you know, you want to cry at certain moments of like Moana that are so touching.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're like watching it with a 7-year-old girl and you're going, okay, to you, it doesn't mean a lot that there's a Disney character who's the lead, who's a young woman. But to me...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This didn't exist until now.
Yeah.
Like, this really means a lot. But it was... Yeah. Anyway, I had a question. I'm going to go back.
Yes.
I had an interesting question. I don't know. I'm pretending to be a decent interviewer, which is... So, with Annie in the Scar, mm-hmm. with all the hats you wore... Because I think your performance is great. Like, are you happy with the performance as well as the writing and the directing?
Right. I am. I think that it's weird. Watching it back now, I think anybody when they make something, they go through a phase of like, I love it, this is the best, to like, this fucking sucks and is terrible and why'd I ever do this? And you kind of come back around to like liking it again. And that's where I am now. I think if I can get picky and judge a little bit, I got a little bit caught up actor Christina and like, oh, I have to show, look at me, I'm so good at acting. And that got in the way of the story just a tiny bit. I felt that in the room a little bit. And again, this is maybe something that I'm just bringing to your attention. You're like, I don't see that at all. But I could have left a little bit more silence, maybe some moments where I felt like it was too rushed to me a little bit in that scene. I could have just slowed it down a little bit or even done a take where I was like, let's just throw it all away. And it doesn't, the water doesn't have to come out of your eyeballs to make this moment real and raw or whatever, but that's really nitpicking.
But you have a lot of moments of quiet too in the film.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if I'm like ripping it apart, this is, you know, the things that go through my brain of like, I'm doing too much. And it's me. It's not Regina. It's me specifically. Like I'm doing too much, you know, that I feel a little bit of hint of.
Right. But as a rule, like you have, I mean, when you reread something or rewatch something, the first instinct is always, see what you would do differently.
Right.
It's the rare person who just focuses on that was a great moment. That was great. You know,
mm-hmm.
maybe all these people who are telling me they like the whole thing are right. You know what I mean? Like it always gets to me when like, I mean, I have some friends who are like, oh, I don't like that film at all anymore. And I'm like, you made a great film. How can you?
We get into our heads and start. I think you can overanalyze something. Like in the last scene where they say goodbye, when I watched, I'm like telling myself, Christina, stop smiling. Why are you smiling? But we literally had one take to get it and the sun was setting. I didn't realize that's the interesting thing about film is everything is so much bigger than you think it's going to be. In my head, I wasn't being a cheese ball, but watching it back, I'm like, if I was watching two actors do this scene, I would have said, that was great. Now just throw away that smile. That's the direction I would have given, but I couldn't, you know what I mean? It's like, how do you do that? When also the sun is setting and you're up against this time and we're just trying to get it before it's pitch black dark.
Yeah, but I would debate you and say the smile kind of works because, I mean, she has sort of come to an understanding and not an inner peace, but you know what I mean? Like she's had a moment of personal development, but not like it's her being content with that moment.
That's
works.
True. And that's why like, yeah, and that's why I did not edit this film, because I needed another person so that my brain wasn't going to just rip apart my performance. And I was stayed focused of like, it's the story. Don't think about you. No one gives a shit about that. You're in your head too much, you know, and having someone else edit really helped keep me honest, because she'd be like, no, that's... Dude, you're just getting too granular because it's your face, you know? So I think that really helped a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. It's really rough when a director edits their own work, let alone edits their own work where they're on screen.
Yeah, I don't know how people do. I needed another person. And I knew exactly what I wanted, but she was able to I couldn't have stared at my face for that much time. I couldn't have done it.
That's a big ask. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would want to do it.
No, I was so fortunate to have Shannon because she was amazing. And she was able to keep me out of my own way. And that I didn't feel the need to like be so concerned about my acting because it was all put together. I didn't have to like see me say the same line 1,000 times. And so we're going through and like switching things up, obviously. But yeah, that was a lifesaver.
Well, very smart decision to bring in a
different... It was an easy one. Yeah. It wasn't one that it was hard to make.
Excellent. Excellent. And so now you've got... And you're just going to... So you... I don't even have to ask if you liked the process because you liked it enough. You're going to do at least two more shorts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm going to make these two this year. Again, like most likely with zero money because that's the budget I'm working with. But that's okay. I just want to... Like you said, I just need more practice at it. I think I need more reps. And it is so fun to think of an idea, write something, and then it's all of a sudden a real thing in the world. I journal, and so it's nice. It's helpful for me to see like, oh, I got this idea on this date. This is when, I keep track of all that stuff so that I can see my own progress. Cause I think often people don't look at their own progress and it's easy to feel like you're behind or you're not doing enough. But if you look back, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm making moves. Maybe it's not moves other people can see so much, but I see the moves I'm making and that's what keeps me going.
For sure. For sure. Absolutely.
Especially having a kid, like anyone with kids, just do it every day. I'm like, fuck, this is hard. I see why people give up. But he's kind of what motivates me to do it in a lot of ways. I mean, I made another short film before Annie that I was also in. I wrote it. I didn't direct that one. And I really started making lots of traction with putting myself out there when I was pregnant. Like that was the catalyst, which is crazy. That was my catalyst. But having my son, I was like, damn, if I'm going to be here and do this, I need to shit or get off the pod. Am I doing this or not?
Right. So right before the world shut down, when you were pregnant,
I wrote
pre-COVID, you were getting traction.
Yeah. I like getting pregnant was a huge, something that we were trying to do, but it happened sooner than I anticipated and I still didn't feel ready. I don't know that anybody feels ready when they have a kid. Is this maybe the third or fourth one? Maybe. I'm just the one for me.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know if you ever feel ready, and it was such a huge life adjustment, and so I just started channeling what I was feeling into art, which is, you know, therapy. I think that's why most people do it. But then also it just lit a fire under me. I was like, all right, I need to do this because I want to show him, A, that you can pursue your dreams and make it work. And B, I didn't want to like use him as an excuse of resentment why I never did it, because I had a kid and I had to put my life on hold. And so I just said, fuck all that. I'm going to just do it. And, you know,
it's kind of amazing because, I mean, I was tempted to praise you for getting the film done after having a kid, even if, you know, the film, you probably couldn't have made this film if you hadn't.
Right.
But you might have made something else.
Right.
But, I mean, Lord knows, as someone who, you know, there's a teenager under this roof, and it's like the idea of getting something done with a young one. I mean, well, so he was like two when you were making it.
Yeah.
And there's a word for the twos, right? They're called terrible. Uh-huh. Though they're not always terrible.
Yeah, no, it's just, and yeah, it was difficult.
But like to make a film in spite of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, like I said, I just was like, it really lit a fire underneath me. And everyone I talk to that's like worried that having a kid, like they want to have a kid, but they're worried it's going to like jack up their career. If you have a supportive partner, which I'm so lucky that I do, it doesn't have to. I think that story of like women can't, they have to stop everything. You don't have to stop everything. And, you know, it's hard. And I have guilt sometimes because I need to do work stuff and he's in preschool and some kids are just still at home with their parents. You know, there's all of that. But yeah, I just want, you know, I want to be a happy person so that I'm not projecting my shit on my kid.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. And again, kids, I don't know. You can't, there's a billion things that go into that human being, mm-hmm. and you can't control all billion.
No, you can't control.
And that was one of the big lessons, Annie and the Scars. You can't, the CC says you can't control everything. No,
it's something I still struggle with. You cannot control anything. This is just kids or no kids. You just can't control anything. I think that there's this myth or like we trick ourselves into thinking we can control something, but you can't control anything. It's all out of your hands.
And controlling people are kind of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I just shared something really, really personal, I guess. Like, I like do what you want to do. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. No. Not always as a parent, but.
Yeah, no, I think we all just want to be free, you know? And I want to try to still have the things that I want to do, but also want to show him. But it's hard. It's hard. Thank God I have preschool. Thank God I have support. My husband's from LA. His family's here. Like, we have support. We're so lucky. Oh, my God. But still, even with that, it's so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's life, baby.
Yeah, and whatever, there's a couple billion people raising kids mm-hmm. at all times. So it's not, you know, I do kind of laugh at the preciousness that some people take towards it. Like, I'm like, you're doing what, like, it's, you know, impoverished people.
Yes.
With none of your assets and privileges and advantages are raising brilliant kids too.
Yeah.
Like it's not. Like, none of us are that
just
special.
Do your best.
Maybe that's my excuse.
I think it's part of the human condition to be fucked up a little by your parents.
Well, yeah.
You know? So it's just his rite of passage. But yeah, it's just.
It is. I'm very proud of this. I said to my stepdaughter not too long. I say it probably more than once, but I'm like, I just think our role in life is to look at our parents' qualities and try to choose the best ones because mm-hmm. they're both in you.
Yeah.
And the question is, are you going to repeat their shittiness or focus on their goodness? Because they're shitty and good in everybody.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That is true.
Yeah.
And don't throw out the good because you hate the bad. You know, that's easy to do. Like the good attributes of someone, if that person has the bad attributes, is it just say that all of them is bad, but you can't throw it all away. There's something good there. Yeah.
You can't. Yeah. There's no, well, I guess there might be absolute evil on this earth, but
there is, but
with the exception of the pure sociopath.
Yes. Take that out of the equation.
Yeah. The average person is good but flawed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and it goes for, it is wild to have it, well, whatever. We shouldn't talk about parenting too much more, but
I know.
But it's wild when you see that moment where the kid realizes parents aren't perfect. They're not gods. Yes. Like, they're gods for a long time.
We're still.
And I don't remember how old she was when I picked up on it, but there was that moment where she was like, yeah, you guys can be wrong. And I'm like, well, your mom can't, but not me. Like, like, if I don't know the answer, I don't wing it. So if I tell you something, it's because I know it's true. But it was very funny. I'm the science guy in the house. But anyway, all right. Is there anything else we should?
I don't think so.
And you going to jump on stage again?
I mean, hopefully with this theater group. Yeah, I would love to do it again. It was so fun. But yeah, right now it's just writing for me.
I'm saying this out loud on a microphone. I should tell you after we finish recording, but like, I have a thing where like, if someone invites me to live stage, I go and I take her because I've taken her to two plays put on by filmmakers so far, even if they're wildly inappropriate. Because by the way, she's like, I've heard every word at school. Right. So it's not a big deal.
I mean, she's how old, 16?
She's 16 now. But when she was 14, I took her to like a little play in Larchmont that was like about watching porn. And her mom got really upset. And I'm like, she's like, mom, I'm in 10th grade. I know about porn. Or I guess it was 9th grade. But it was like, then the playwright who was on stage, afterwards we met him and he was like, oh my God, you brought it. But anyway, I think live stage is
Well, I'll invite you
so
to the next one.
Underappreciated.
Yes. It's so fun.
And it's so special.
Yeah.
It's so special to be in a room with performers. And it's like, mm-hmm.
There's such a energy about it where it's like, you're kind of all in it together, the audience and the people on stage.
And you're
hate is a strong word.
It's rough for me when people criticize LA, but I have to admit, as someone who had season tickets to the Taper Forum downtown, and we saw beautiful, like six amazing plays per year there, and they shut the doors because the entertainment capital of the world can't support live theater of quality. And it's
love going to see comedy, improv, like all of it. It's so, even when it's quote unquote not like great, I love it. Because it takes so much bravery to get up there, and everybody has an off night, especially with stand-up. Nobody's perfect on every night. I love seeing people work out material. I love the whole live performance ecosystem. It's just a blast.
It's huge. And if we don't support it, like, where will it go?
Yeah, we got to keep it alive.
Yeah. So every year I'm like, okay, New Year's resolution is 5 live plays, 5 concerts, 5 like gatherings at the house.
Yeah.
Cause otherwise we'll just sit and watch.
Yeah.
Film festival submissions every night and or streaming service.
Yeah. Are you just watching movies every single day for, cause you have 2, right?
2, but they're 6 months apart.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, actually, I'm very lucky to have a life partner who will sit down with me and we'll watch stuff for an hour or two. And then, you know, and then we go, whatever. First time I saw Andy in the Scar was in that room.
Love it.
On the big TV. I don't believe in watching stuff on a computer.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. You really have to enjoy them on a big screen, especially, I don't know.
Ooh, movies weren't meant to be watched on a computer,
no,
right?
I mean, yeah. There's, yeah. I need that theater experience is just so important too, in different ways from live shows.
I know.
It's the community of it.
I used to have the egomaniac, whatever idea, like, oh, if the festivals get big enough, we can just buy a theater and then do whatever the fuck we want.
Do it.
And LA real estate's a bit much, I think.
Yeah, no, that's
but I
fair.
Still, every time I see a shuttered thing along Ventura Boulevard, I'm like, I wonder if you could convert that into a little
anything.
Little 40 seater and then just like,
yeah.
Film festival every weekend. I'm rambling. I'm taking up your time. All right. Do you want to name a website or social media people should follow?
Sure. I guess my website, it's just my name, ChristinaBirdsall.com. And, you know, stuff I've made is up there. Links to some articles I've published. And then Instagram. I've connected with a lot of people that are making shit on there, which is also just my name. Just my name.
By the way, I mean to say congratulations too. Like, I let it slide by that you've been published by the Huffington Post and stuff. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was.
You must be a really, I mean, you're not just a good writer based on Annie and the Scar. Like, that's.
Yeah.
I think they get like a jillion submissions. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird. I did the personal essay vertical. So it was just me popping off about whatever I wanted to talk about. But it was a great lesson in like, don't read the comments because no good can come from that. And so all the fears of like, people are going to like me. Oh man, I triggered the shit out of people with what I wrote. Cause one was talking about wanting to be alone for Mother's Day. And that really pissed people off.
Fuck them.
But yeah, exactly. Fuck them. And you know what? I went down the rabbit hole. It was, you know, I knew I shouldn't, but I did it and I just had to do it. Like, okay, I did that. I'm never doing that again. I didn't do that with the second one I wrote for them. But also people reached out to me and it's kind of the same with filmmaking. It's just, I don't give a shit if a couple people feel seen or validated in some way by something that I wrote or made. That's great. That's wonderful. That's all I could ask for. And that happened. So I was like able to erase all the jerk faces that were so relentless in the comments.
Yeah, but they're just trying to virtue signal about what they think parenting should be. And I will say this right off the bat. Anybody whose partner is a mother, the idea of taking one or more children and taking them out of the house for the day for Mother's Day, you are doing that mother a motherfucking solid.
Yeah, everybody wants that. Even the moms that came for me. You want that. You just don't want to admit that. Everybody needs a moment.
Everyone
needs a beat. And the last thing I want to do is go to brunch with a bunch of families. No,
where you
thank
have to
you.
Wait an hour for the stupid yes, table, the, all
no,
that shit.
Uh-uh. None of that sounds fun to me.
No, I have an almost son who was a young actor who lived with me a long time ago and with my first wife, and I became like a father figure to him, and then he had two kids, and his wife was a stay-at-home mom, and they would come over here to this house. And they'd hand the 4-year-old to me and the 1.5-year-old to my wife. And she just loved walking around with that beautiful little baby the whole time. And I just loved playing with, I would set our jacuzzi to 90. So it would be perfect, like bathtub temperature for the 4-year-old. And I would play with the 4-year-old for 6 hours. She'd hold the 1.5-year-old for 6 hours. And the mom napped.
That's great.
That's all she wanted to do. She like loved coming over here because she got off duty. She had two competent adults to take care of the kids.
Yeah, that is.
And it was huge.
Doing
I want to say, if we get to the point that you guys leave them here for a day, overnight, and come back, no problem here. Like, we're eating them up. I mean.
Yeah, everybody needs a break. Like, single parents, there should just be a special fund for them to get breaks to whatever. The hardest job in the world is a single parent, for sure.
Oh, my God.
I can't.
There should be, like.
We should all. I'm happy. I'll contribute to the pot. Let's just take care of.
Well,
those
like there's
parents.
There's like the dog daycare, this daycare, that daycare. There should be a place where like 10 single parents can go to a room, and or 7, and each one takes a turn suffering for that day, or two per day, and then the other 5 go have a good day.
Yeah, just chill, whatever that means. Take a nap.
And by the way, people aren't being bad parents. Stop virtue signaling about what a mom or dad or whatever parent needs to do every day. Because we all grew up with parents. We were just latchkey kids, right?
Oh, yeah.
We turned out better than any other generation. I feel very...
Don't. No competition with the generation.
No competition with the boomers. But I mean, you know, the greatest generation. Like, you know, I mean, everybody, like, I don't know. Kids are precious, but like, get over it.
Yeah,
like,
I need a break.
Like, there is the, you know.
It's also a hellscape sometimes. Everybody needs a break.
It's too much freaking work to do by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it used to be a community.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
We could talk another hour about.
Welcome
about
back
society.
To Jeff and Christina's parenting podcast.
Yeah, and talking about. Seriously, relax the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chill out.
Your kid's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be fucked up at the same time, just like all of us.
Mm-hmm. It's human. It's being human.
I know. Like, you're raising a human being. It's not, mm-hmm. you know. If you want something perfect, get a bunny rabbit. There we Aww. Go. I had to throw that in. All right. Well, I got you to ChristinaBirdsall.com, and at Christina Birdsall will be clickable links.
Great.
I've got a wonderful young man named Calvin helping me out now because the festivals have grown too big for me to, like,
do it all.
I can't do it all anymore.
You're like the Ryan Seacrest of, like, independent film. I swear to God. Like, I got a podcast. I got two film festivals.
Fucking ridiculous. Fucking ridiculous. It's just like, it was just, it was all natural, but a mission creep got to me. So now I need help. All right. And talking about help, I'm now going to name all the fucking things that keep me too busy by saying thank you for listening to the Discover Indie Film Podcast. If you want to learn more about this podcast, go to discoverindiefilm.com. There was a TV series born out of this podcast that people came over here and they sat down at the mics. And if they made a feature, it was on streaming inevitably. And if it was a short, it was lost in the ocean of YouTube. So, and someone told me about Prime Video Direct. So I said, hey, why don't we put a bunch of shorts together and put a TV series on Amazon? And we did. So there's 7 seasons up right now. Season 8 is a brewing, and I'm probably going to put Calvin in charge of that because I don't have time. But anyway, I got to stop talking about Calvin. Calvin, are you listening? This is like the first time I've mentioned you on the podcast. All right, so where was I? Oh, yeah, and it's at DIF Wins on social media. Everywhere you go, DIF Wins. And if you want to be nice, like and subscribe. Give it 5 stars. We talked about Annie and the Sky being at Film Invasion Los Angeles. We hold that festival every June, and you can learn more at filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. The sister festival that's every November is the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. That's shermanoaksff.com and at shermanoaksff on social media. And finally, because I'm really just that dumb, like, I did one extra thing, and that's really what broke my time, which was I kept getting these phone calls about starting a smart TV app / streaming service, and I kept saying no. Which I said no to starting film festivals for like 5+ years.
Interesting.
And then I finally said, wait a minute. Okay, we could do one like centered around indie films. So there's a smart TV app called TV High. And if you go to watchtvhigh.com, you can sign up. It's also on Roku, Apple TV, Android TV, Amazon Fire TV, iOS, and Android Mobile. And those are TV highs, all just great stuff to watch, high quality. And it might be even better if you're stoned, if you can use cannabis responsibly. That's sort
of... Oh, so it's high quality.
Yeah. Air quotes were used. But you don't have to be high. A lot of people don't know it. It was born because I do on occasion, now that it's legal, I do on occasion enjoy a gummy. And so we had a movie night at our original theater that was all stuff that would be great to watch high. And then when I got hit up to start another smart TV app, I'm like, the film festival's a week a year. We don't need a smart TV app for that. Oh, but people get high year round. So anyway, I'm boring myself.
Oh.
Thank you, Christina.
And thank you.
No, thank you. There'd be nothing without you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I said that like a question. All right. Bye.
Bye.